We were able to raise money without anything. Like, we didn't have a product, we didn't have a vision, we didn't have a TAM, we didn't have a pitch deck, we didn't have a bank account. We literally had zero when we got the offer, which sounds awesome, but it is honestly, like, it's really, really hard because you've got nothing. And then it's like, cool, what can we do? And honestly, like, lots of Australian investors were confused. We got called unhinged. I got called weird, strangely. We got called woolly by investors.
How dare they?
I know. I know.
What type of AI startup will fail by this time, 2026?
The things that require long horizon tasks, where you're not a frontier lab and have no capability of training in models. To do that long horizon task, 100% your smoke. Things that allow LLMs to touch a thing multiple times without a human in the loop, whether that's memory, whether that's some sort of artifact, like, I think you're done.
Hello and welcome to In the Blink of AI, your front row seat to the AI revolution. I'm Georgie Healy, and this week we are joined by Enhanced Labs and two of the founders, Mike and Hazik. These guys have been hiding in plain sight. You might be familiar with them and their hot takes and honest, real AI insights on social media, and why they haven't been willing to ship a product in this time of frothy, hypey AI, and why it's taken so long for them to be excited about what they're about to release. And we have a bit of an exclusive on the show today. This interview is a little bit more conversational, admittedly somewhat chaotic compared to other tech leader episodes. I think you're going to love it, actually. I learned a lot about what is actually going on with some startups that may not survive by this time next year. But don't let their sense of humor fool you. These guys are backed by Blackbird, QIC. They were in the AFR this month. It doesn't take much LinkedIn scrolling to see that they've got quite the pedigree. So even though they're doing it in an unhinged way with shorts and Birkenstocks in financial magazines, they are doing it their way, but I think that they're onto something huge. So don't forget where you heard about them first. Let's dive into the show.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Mike, Hazik, thank you for joining in the Blink of AI. I have been wanting to have you guys on the show for months, but then you came out on the AFR and I was like, I've got to get you on before you're too cool for me. I'm going to start with the elephant in the room, which is you've had a huge pivot. Mike, what are you passionate about? What do you want to solve?
This has been a big question for us ever since we started, to be very honest. Even as recently as I was in Sydney having coffee with Tris, one of the guys from Blackbird that looks after us. And he was like, people keep asking, what are you doing? And to be honest, like, we have not had a good answer for that for a hell of a long time. And we've been doing things, particularly Blackbird us. We've been doing lots of things. We've been very busy. Very, very busy. Lots of important things. But we've been doing lots of learning, lots of experimentation. I think one thing that was like, and I had this conversation the other day, that was really awesome, was we were able to raise money without anything. Like, we didn't have a product, we didn't have a vision, we didn't have a TAM, we didn't have a pitch deck, we didn't have a bank account, a shareholders agreement. We literally had zero when we got the offer, which sounds awesome. And to be honest, like, we thought that was pretty cool in telling people.
It is kind of cool, to be fair.
But it is honestly, like, it's really, really hard because you've got nothing. And then it's like, cool, what can we do? Like the bet effectively, like, Blackbird invested in us, like, for the two V's, the two, like, most important V's when it comes to fundraising. It's velocity and vibes. And so off the back of that, like, we just continued down that path and we just, like, had heaps of fun and we tried a bunch of things and we learned lots of lessons around like product and customer and like research and particularly, like, and Hazik will probably talk to this later, like, LLMs and how nobody really genuinely, like, understands how best to place them at the moment. And there's all these open problems that you get exposed to, sometimes by design, sometimes by accident. You kind of stumble into these weird positions. So, yeah, this last period for us has been trying to work out, like, what the hell we're doing. And as of very recently, surprise, surprise, we've made a pivot. But this one feels... this is the one. This feels different than the other
ones. You guys have been very honest throughout too. Like when you didn't have a product, you were very honest about that. I loved like a social you post, which is like all the things that you don't like that are being built and how you're trying to avoid that. And so when I've noticed your excitement about this pivot, I feel like because you've been honest throughout about what you don't like, it feels quite tangible that this is exciting to you as someone who's been watching from the sidelines.
Yeah. To be honest, like at least from my side, like speaking from my perspective, the big, the honesty thing was I sat on the sidelines in a, like a shitty bootstrap startup that struggled for so many years and saw people raise money and go onto like podcasts and be in the AFI and like be like pretended that they knew what the hell they were doing. And a lot of them didn't. And I just hated that. And it made me feel really insecure about what we were doing and that we had something that they didn't have. And that's not true. Like, maybe in certain instances there are, but I think in a lot of instances, like everyone's trying to work it out. So I think at least from my perspective, I've tried to be very deliberate in being like incredibly honest and open in the good things and the bad things to, for everybody like trying to have a crack that is doing it tough, that they know that like nobody knows, particularly in the current AI landscape, like nobody has a clue what they're doing. Founders, VCs, anyone, everyone's trying to work it out on the fly. And so that's like a big part of why I've been driving that narrative as part of like our social strategy, if one could call it that.
Yeah, the honesty is so refreshing, especially for us that are all working in tech and in the AI space. It is that like sex in high school, like, are you doing, I don't know if you're doing it. No, not me. But that guy said that he, you need to listen to the first check episode. If you don't listen to Cheryl and Maxine, can't help you there.
They didn't reply to my email.
Yeah.
They're in my bad books.
Now you know
why. I hear that lovely.
There's kind of an interesting thread with the pivots, right? Like, because like right now, like this is probably the first time in tech in a very long time that like the startup community and the tech community in general is building on top of a technology that we're learning about at the same time as the scientific community. Because we're getting papers that come out and say, hey, you know, it seems like LLMs could do this, but it turns out they can't. Well, that's kind of a problem because like we're not normally learning about things in that way. You're not normally learning about things from research papers that are being published on the day about the technology you're sitting on top of. And I think the unique thing right now is like, okay, well, like no one really has the answers, including the scientific community. It's an open problem. And like when you're in that kind of like hyper uncertainty kind of space, like two things are important always, right? Like the first thing is that you can finish things. And the second thing is that you know when to not finish a thing. And I think the death trap that a lot of startups will enter is they'll say, hey, you know, like we were going to do this thing based on these assumptions because the scientific community back when we did it, like we didn't know whether it was going to be okay or not. Well, the scientific community said it's not going to be okay. And the answer to that is not we're going to continue. The answer to that is like, hey, like let's reevaluate and work out sort of like where we stand now. And like we've been stung by that kind of continuously. And the reason we can survive is that we've been super open about being like, hey, here, like we know where to stop.
Yeah,
it's very, very important. We know where to stop.
Yeah, there is kind of like this overlaying cloud of like potential doom, which we're just kind of working through and just assuming that we can just keep working and the doom is there, but that's okay. What particularly exciting or scary or important problem, Hazeek, would you like to be part of the solution for?
Oh, right. So actually, I'll let Mike talk to sort of what we pivoted into because we never actually touched on that.
And
That sprawls into a bunch of like difficult technical things.
Tell me.
So I won't bore you with all the pivots because there were so many and that would take up the vast majority of this time. But there was definitely a path of learning, again, from a technical customer standpoint particularly. But where we've landed is this crazy future where effectively, like, we can enable for every user to design their own personal internet. So there's been a lot of chatter for many years about, like, dynamic UIs and, like, the living interface. And a lot of people have said that it's kind of, to an extent, like, the last frontier as it relates to, like, connecting AI with humans. Like, that could potentially be a big unlock, like a bit of a bottleneck as that's kind of where the two ends meet. And yeah, through a lot of great work by Hazik and a lot of me dropping fire emojis in the chat, we may have landed somewhere where we can enable such a thing. And
so tell me, like, it's not just putting the microphone on and like tell me what you're envisioning it looks like when you say voice.
As a startup founder, you're juggling multiple priorities. From the expected, like finding product market fit, to the unexpected, like customer requests for SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification. Achieving compliance is time consuming, and time spent on that is time away from the needs of the business. And that's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one solution for startups to come compliant quickly and build a security foundation with ease. With a combination of automation, an extensive partner network, and a security marketplace containing 385 plus pre-built integrations, Vanta provides the necessary tools and expertise for startups to achieve compliance seamlessly, no matter how urgent your needs are, and at every phase of growth. Over 10,000 leading companies, including CipherStash, Handle, and Indebted, trust Vanta to automate compliance so they can focus on growing the needs of their business. Here is the important part. Startup listeners of the show get $1,000 off if they go to dayone.fm/blink.
Well, in this instance, it's not so much voice. So most definitely we love voice, and I love banging on about voice as an interface, and there will most definitely be elements, but like a true UI as it sits on your screen, we're talking about being able to have a personal UI for the apps that you use every day, personally, professionally. Like the other day using the product I've redesigned. At first, this was like kind of like cutesy, and then I was like, this is like really super poisonous, because somebody made like a smart-ass comment about it, but I redesigned ChatGPT to look like Bluey, and it was like, my daughter's name's Thea, was like, hey Thea, tell me about some cool ideas that you've got, and let's chat about it, and it had Bluey, and it had like animations, and that's ChatGPT, that is the ChatGPT.com website, that is the model that underpins it, but it looks like Bluey, it feels like Bluey. She's having a ball. Now she won't stop grabbing my laptop.
Yes.
So that's like the poisonous bit up now, like one-shotted my daughter. but like that's like a kind of like a novel, fun example. But then there's things like people with big, gross legacy systems that they hate using. And they're like, this UI was made in the 90s. I'm going to shoot myself if I have to touch it again. And they can sit on top of it and be like, make it look like Facebook. Like I use Facebook every day. I know how to use Facebook. I know the design patterns. That makes me feel comfortable.
Specifically, Mike, on Facebook every day?
Well, no.
Okay.
I'm not a boomer.
Just checking.
I skateboard.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see my content. I'm a skateboarder. Yeah. I am.
Okay. For the record, anyone that's listening in, Mike is super cool.
Mid-30s. I'm in ballpark.
Early to mid-30s. Peak cool age.
Typically, yes.
Mike, can I just ask you a quick thing on that?
How can you pivot into like a serious question after just attacking me personally so aggressively?
No, like
what kind of a show is this?
That is my one skill set. My one skill set is to keep you on your toes. Serious question.
Well, I'm not wearing shoes, so I'm well positioned to do that.
I'm wearing Birks just for your benefit, actually.
Well done.
Yeah. So we had a guest on the show 5-6 episodes ago, who said, imagine, he's like, someone needs to build this, and maybe you guys have inadvertently built this. Think of anyone that's in the older demographic, and when they go on websites and it's just not user-friendly for them. Hazik is nodding. Is that even a potential area?
Yeah. That's exactly it. So there's sort of like two unlocks, right? Like the first one is like sort of the hyper-custom web where you can go on and say, hey, you know what? Like I want the interface to work like this. Like this is how I want the comment thing to work. This is what I want to see on my feed, but you can kind of control that by talking to your browser. So that's kind of like what users get, right? But like what companies get is a way to just very rapidly prototype a bunch of different experiences. So you can go in there and just say, you know what? Like I have this roadmap item. There were 20 takes that I could take on this. Let's have all 20. Let's hand them out to some cohorts of users. Like that sort of classic story of Sheryl Sandberg with the 50 blue shades. What if that could be like actual features and actual takes on features and actual components on features, where people are like, where companies are building exactly against what people want, and people are able to shape things into exactly what they want. So we end up with this sort of like hyper fluid, like living interface, essentially.
You know, where my mind immediately goes, though, is that sounds like a lot of credits. Sounds like a lot of GPU. How can you afford it, guys? How good is that Blackbird money for this?
that's why we're on the podcast.
That's why we're on this podcast. You sign up to
give us GPUs.
Don't use that as a thumbnail for the article,
please. There's sort of two directions here, right? Like there's sort of like like the exciting thing for consumers is like LLMs are becoming better and better, like kind of like building out these interfaces at smaller and smaller scales. Like we're starting to see like a couple of LLMs start to enter like consumer hardware. And at that point, like the sky's the limit. It's a time for these like hyper custom sort of experiences that right now you really can't pay for. Like on the other end of that, like the companies, right? As you build out your user interface, like how do you make sure that you can experiment really rapidly, very quickly? How do you make your products pliable? And for that, like the cost today is just the whatever the cost is for you to get a, you know, a Claude code or whatever it is to kind of operate. So we've got tailwinds sort of pushing the customers along, and then like the tailwinds have already kind of pushed the businesses along. So it's really about kind of like working out where to land at that point.
Do you have a preferred provider of compute, and can you share any secrets or no?
You've probably played around,
right, with the different tools.
Don't answer the question, Tazeek. This is a trap. She's Google affiliated for starters, so she's
no.
A plant,
they don't sponsor the show, and... so they're dead to me, actually. So,
I'm very much an AWS guy. Just because I'm from like, and I was at Amazon for like a long time. Like in terms of LLM providers, I think like the two ones that are like sort of captured a lot of kind of market share right now, like ChatGPT and like Claude, and they provide like really awesome experiences. But like, I think like in the very near future, like particularly with like Laura, like I think these like more open source models that are very easy to kind of like fine tune and in a much more affordable way will end up sort of stealing the cake. I think like open source is probably going to be the one that kind of wins like that base layer, and they haven't won it right now, but like I'm kind of watching it closely. I think we're like a year, 2 years away from these like hyper custom, very powerful models that that just sit on open source weights.
That's the social promo. Thank you, Tazeek. That's amazing. Let's dive into hack of the week. I want a hack from each of you that you can share with listeners that they can think about going forward. Tazeek, why don't you? Oh no, Mike, he's already started. You go first. Hi.
Thank you, Georgie. Mine's voice. As we discussed before, I'm youthful, and young people like me are very,
People are watching this on YouTube, Mike. You can't actually lie.
Oh, the vid that our faces will be there? Oh, shit. Okay. That hurt me. No, the big thing for me is voice, to be honest. Like, being an older head in this game, I'm really bad with computers and software, and changing behaviors and adopting software is something I'm terribly bad at. And voice is something that, I think Tazeek really kind of like championed internally, to the annoyance of a lot of us early, because he wouldn't shut the hell up in our little Queenslander, just yapping all day back and forth, like literally like hours and hours and hours. And then we finally moved a couch into one of the rooms and kind of locked him in there. And you just hear him yabbering away. And then we all started to pick it up. And then for good or for bad, it changed the whole way that we work. Pretty much everyone at the team now, like largely, like exclusively talks to their computers. And so the future of offices will be interesting, because like we've got desks and monitors, and now like I'll be down the back, by the pool, obviously get my tan on. But I'll like, someone will be outside, somebody will be at the desk, somebody in the kitchen, somebody will be in a room. Everyone's just talking away. Now, like on mobiles, being able to run around and continue your work and do actual meaningful work like on the fly It's crazy. It is just like the biggest, I think for me, the biggest uplift in productivity and improvement of from an experience standpoint. It's been so cool.
So people are sleeping on voice, I feel. I feel like people aren't leveraging voice as a tool. For sure.
And it's like, particularly like talking to your laptop may feel a bit weird because you don't do it, but you talk to your phone. You have headphones and talk to people. So like that pattern shouldn't be as weird as it is. The other side of it that I don't think a lot of people appreciate is like, one, the experience for sure is great, but LLMs thrive with context. And so you, particularly if you enable like the voice-to-voice chat mode, they are really good at like eliciting like stories and anecdotes and names. And so what you're doing there is like context engineering. You're enriching the context of which the model can work on top of. Versus in a chat interface, like everything about the UI is encouraging conciseness. So it's like a tiny little text box, typing sucks. So you just like one or two word answers, and then the models then obviously like aggressively trying to like contribute. And thus it's like pulling in a bunch of random insights and context and data to try and fill the gaps that it has. So from like an experience standpoint, voice is awesome. And from an actual output standpoint, the context is incredibly powerful for the model to give you meaningful, personalized insights.
I actually love that hack. Are you using ChatGPT or?
It depends. At the moment, unfortunately, I like Claude, to be honest, but Claude Desktop doesn't have voice enabled as yet. So I'm like, I use our old product, one of our old iterations. There's been talk about sunsetting that, and I'm being annoying and saying like, no, fuck off. I actually still really love talking away to this thing. So I'm fighting to retain that. But yeah, Claude Desktop doesn't have voice. So often I'm talking into ChatGPT and then very manually copying and pasting that into Claude to then run that interface. But yeah, it's sick. I definitely
love
encourage
that
it.
Hack.
It's weird. And I think in the early days, you feel a bit strange doing the whole thing and telling a story and naming people. But once you get into the flow, like you won't shut up. And that's where the model benefits from that kind of behavior.
Beautiful. Hazeek, what's your hack of the week?
Like if what you're doing is not like making a Zapier thing or like an NNN thing, or like you're trying to like code something with an LLM, you probably don't have to worry too much about prompt engineering, and you probably don't have to worry that much about context engineering. Like the way to drive an LLM very well is conversational. Like I think a lot of people are like, oh, how do I one shot this? Like how do I come up with the perfect, like, and the answer is you probably can't. Like and a really good way of kind of like reasoning about how you want to work with an LLM, if what you're doing is just doing a normal job, is if you open, like if you like go into one of the strong models and one of the reasoning models, and you click on that thing that lets you see the reasoning, that's how you're supposed to interact with it. Like and you'll see that it's not doing some crazy like one shot thing. You're supposed to just sort of help it take one step forward and then sort of see where it goes, and then just be conversational with it. Now, you'll be able to get somewhere much better than the reasoning model can, because you actually have a brain and you can think through things and you can reason in more useful ways than an LLM can. So your train of thought with the LLM is going to be very high quality. Like if you're just casually using an LLM, that's probably how you should be using it. Like this craziness on like, and I realize you can't share that on LinkedIn and you can't share that on TikTok. You can't be like, steal my amazing prompt, because there isn't one, right? Like your amazing prompt is that you're using your head. Like, but that is that is the way that most people use LLMs. Oh, at
the
least
best
at a high
prompt
level,
is
like,
using your literal brain. I think that is such a good tip. You heard it here first, guys.
Like you're just trying to set the LLM up to succeed, right? If you understand what it's doing is pattern matching, then you're trying to get it to kind of autocomplete in the direction that's useful. But yeah, like if I sit down and I see sort of like a lot of these guys were driving a lot of the LLM adoption on Amazon, they're very fluid with it. None of them are sitting there being like, oh, I found this prompt from TikTok and it is the ultimate prompt. They're just talking and just thinking through it with an LLM.
Yeah, I'm so bearish on the perfect prompt as well. These people that tell me they have, like, where are you storing all your prompts? I'm like, I literally don't store prompts. That sounds to me insane. Is that insane? Yeah. Do you store prompts somewhere, guys?
Like, I mean, I used to, like, and it can be helpful, like, as a tool in enterprise when you're just kind of like, hey, everyone's scared, and then, like, don't know what it means to think with an LLM. Then you can kind of, like, bootstrap them by being like, hey, here's, like, a sane place to start. But then people tend to get trapped in that world where they're just like, now I need another one. How do I get to do this other thing? And, like, that's not you learning how to use an LLM. Like, you're just, like, kind of pasting things around. And you can't get depth, and you can't get kind of, like, specialization that way.
And that's perhaps where this conversation around people aren't using their brains anymore. They're just typing into the LLM, and it's like critical thinking, actually using a brain, probably going to get better results. Those were very good hacks, guys. I can't even lie. I want to ask you about something that you're specifically interested in. You're moving super fast. You've pivoted. You're changing the UI UX interface for people to play with different versions of that to get the best result for themselves. Is the internet cooked, Hazeek? The whole internet? Does it all suck?
No, it's not cooked. No,
we're about to enter a world of...
Yeah, most of the internet has always been cooked, but like...
Shout out to 4chan. You're gonna get doxxed.
The internet's not cooked. Internet's not cooked. I think we're about to enter like the world of like the kind of like the hyper custom internet. And like why is that appealing, right? Because like for most of the history of the internet, the people that get to have opinions on how things feel and how you use them has been the company that makes the thing, and not the user, right? And why is that an issue? Well, like the company's kind of like a good place to start with that sort of stuff because they can reason about the problem deeply. But like a lot of what drives the design of a website has nothing to do with the customer, right? It has to do with the constraints of the business. Like, why does Amazon look like the way it does? It's very fragmented. There's very little cohesion in the website. Well, it's because Amazon needs to move very quickly. They're a very consumer-facing company because they need to move very, very fast. It's a very competitive space. You can't create cohesion between your features. Like, you have to have every team make their own decision about things and you get fragmentation, right? Like, and that's okay for someone like me. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. But like a lot of people don't want fragmentation, right? They're trying to do a very specific thing. They don't have that interface now. And like that was created for them by a company dealing with those constraints. Same with Apple. Like, why is Apple so like slow? Like, I mean, they don't do software. Well, they do software, but they don't like, you know, that's not what they're known for. Apple tends to create these super high cohesion experiences. Well, that's why they're always late. Like, that's why they're always lagging behind, right? So like those constraints are the company's constraints. They're not like my intent. Like when I turn up to Amazon, I'm not like, I want a super low cohesion, crazy website. Like I just want to buy a thing. Like, and like, you know, I don't buy a lot of things on Amazon. So I kind of want it to be a bit simple. Like that's the interface that I want. Like, now that might not make sense for Amazon to produce, but like, it's the thing that I want for me. I think we're about to enter like that world of the internet. So that's not cooked. I think the internet's going to pump. I think it's, I think the internet's going to like, it's going to become the internet that like I've gotten to use this whole time because I've been able to code and I've been able to like, you know, if I don't like stuff, I can just like kind of script things and make them go away. Like,
Enter its hot girl era. Is that the takeaway?
Okay. The internet's about to like hit people like a glove.
Can we use inclusive language, please? I don't know what a hot girl era is.
I know that you don't, Mike. What about? I'll send you like a Urban Dictionary example. Okay, but I am curious, Hazeek. So you want. You're on Amazon, you're like, I want to check out quickly. When I'm shopping, I'm like, I love like looking at clothes for hours. We can both have the same internet. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can both have the same Amazon.com, but it just kind of wraps around the thing that we want that is sort of reflective of the intent that we want.
Does that mean for ads, though? Like if I paid for an ad to go on a website, how does that play into all of this?
So I've gone on a bit of an evolution, like, so with ads, like with data collection, with kind of both of them, right? Like our first iteration would mean that, like, yeah, you can control a lot of that, but like, I don't think like with ads and with data collection, it's a question of like all of them are bad, all of them are good. I think it's more of a question of like how do you make it a fair exchange? Like, I'm okay with YouTube showing me ads because I don't want to pay for YouTube. I'm actually okay with Facebook gathering a little bit of data because I don't want to pay for Facebook, right? Like, the thing that I'm not okay with is people trying to get freebies off me, where it's not a free exchange, where I've like, oh, like, where I'm just kind of like, hey, I kind of feel like I already did a thing for you just then, and you're trying to, I feel like you're trying to get a free lunch.
Agree.
Here. Like, that's kind of where
Agree.
It feels yucky.
Yes.
So I guess the short answer is like our first iteration gives you quite a lot of control. But I think the future of like that kind of space is really going to be a future around how do you make it a reasonable exchange when like the consumer is in control? I think that looks like data gathering that's like a lot more reasonable and sensible and adds it like a lot more ergonomic and friendly to the user. Like these kind of super hostile patterns of smashing you with like ads right in the face. I think they can go away in a customizable internet. I think like that doesn't mean ads, no more ads. Like, but what that does mean is if you want to have an ad and succeed at that ad, like, well, you have to think about it more. Like, you have to make sure it's actually reasonable.
Isn't it funny? Like we have just stopped watching free to air. And so an ad on free to air, if I want to watch the football, which is very rare, but Queenslander, I'm very like, oh, an ad. I'm not used to seeing an ad on the TV and it feels very confronting. Whereas I'm the same as you. I'm not paying for YouTube Premium. Very happy to like allow those ads in that context. It doesn't feel like an unfair exchange to your point.
Yep.
Mike, hi. I want to talk a little bit about you guys and building in general again, because you kind of mentioned it before. To anyone that isn't familiar with you guys, you do have a lot of hype. And building an AI startup right now, there's AI startup and then there's AI startup. What gets cut through? Why do you guys get cut through? What is fake news that people are getting confused about when it comes to building an AI startup? He's buffering really badly in his brain right now.
I think in regards to like a product in market or just generally as a startup, is there somewhere particular you want me to take that?
I actually think in terms of building something that isn't, I run a podcast, right? And so nearly a year has passed since I first started the show. A lot of the episodes from the beginning of the show have not survived. And they may have got funding, they may have not got funding. I want to know two things. One is how do we know whether something is being built now will survive in a year? What do you think won't survive in a year? And when it comes to funding, who's getting funded that deserve it?
For the funding standpoint, I think we've had, this has been a funny conversation, as equal after this. So like particularly when word started to come out that we'd raise money, in the manner of which we did, under the terms of which we did, a lot of people were very confused. Some annoyed, some wanted to know like what the secret sauce was. And somewhat naively, we started to try and be helpful and provide advice around how to run a process. And we may have been tapped on the shoulder and said like, yeah, maybe don't talk about that stuff. I don't know if it's particularly helpful. Because it wasn't. I think, and again, I feel I can say this because I spent 6 years trying to raise money and run a startup with limited success. We somehow managed to create this like hectic environment of like great cohesion as a team and interpersonal relationships. Like we've got long histories together in like this weird way where we've all known each other for almost 10 years, but we hadn't spent huge amounts of time together in the same room. But with that, there's like a lived history, which is really cool. So we've got really, really awesome, like genuine mateship and respect for each other. We all went in weird directions and we had this kind of nice mix of like Jesse design, Hazeek engineering, and me, I don't know, doing whatever I do, Opsy.
Vibes.
Selly, yeah. Just by
personality higher, yeah.
Except fucking hell, exactly that. And then skill set. So, like companies. So, like big tech. We had big sexy logos: Google, Amazon. And then I'd done the startup thing. So, all that I think was really interesting, particularly in the Australian ecosystem. Not many people saw that type of group come together with history and complementary skills and complementary backgrounds that had some sex appeal. And then even coming into the process, was chaos. Like, we were unhinged. We spoke quickly. We laughed. We pivoted. We high velocity. And honestly, like, lots of Australian investors were confused. We got called unhinged. I got called weird, strangely. We got called woolly by investors.
How dare they?
I know. I know. So a lot of people were like, there's something here that is interesting, but like, but there was no ability for them to pattern match because we were a pattern breaker play. And so a lot of them were around and had been like friendly and what have you, but nobody was kind of in a position where they were willing to make the bet. And then the great Michael Tolo came along and he most definitely was aware of the chaos. And I'd known him previously, so I had some fun conversations with him where he's like, there's something awesome here, but he's like, you guys are nuts. He's like, this is like, you need to help me shape this up in a way that I can sell this thing, because like, as of right now, this thing is like, this is intense.
And I've been very unfair to you calling you a personality hire. I think anyone that knows you and sees you knows that, yes, high velocity, yes, maybe weird, but you know what you're doing. Like, you do know what you're doing. That I saw your LinkedIn posts of how you hunted your team down. That's not an accident, Mike. Like, you knew what you wanted
Mike's
in a team.
Man.
Yeah.
Like just a crafty yeah. man. It's very
I'm
powerful.
A trickster.
Yeah.
I'm a trickster.
What did you want in your team? Like, you mentioned skills-wise, engineering, design, you've got the commercial acumen, but was there any special source personality-wise where you're like, if you want to be part of this, this is the vibe?
We just like having fun. This is something that I think I'd thought about, probably not actively and labeled, but like Hazeek very early on, the first like video call Hazeek and I had was fucking chaos. I just like come off the back of a knee surgery. I was like a day after, I was like high on pain medication. I'd been joking with him that I was catfishing him and I didn't exist. So I joined the call with like a hat on, with my face covered, and then he joined the call with his face covered, and then we spoke in weird voices. So like from the jump, the tone was set that we were going to be weird and experimental, and but like underpinning all of that is like a bunch of very capable, very hardworking, very ambitious people. But to this day, like the people that come around, I think again can be a little bit confused because it's like laughter. It's like there's lots of laughter, lots of ridiculousness, yelling, music. It's chaos, this environment.
I've been following you guys for a year, and yes, I'm seeing the laughter, I'm seeing the sarcasm, but also, Hazeek, you're currently in SF, and Mike, you're about to be in SF. Like, you guys, I think, yeah, you can't really put you guys in a box, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of that is sort of, like, by design. I think, like the two rarest commodities in engineering are, like, playfulness and enthusiasm. And in order for you to like build creative things and be nimble and sort of like be willing to move as like a space pushes you around, you really do need those two things. And there's no hack to getting those two things. Like you just need to be like that, right? Like the most creative engineers I've ever met, like the ones that have like dozens of patents, are just that. Like, they're just very playful. They're just very curious. They're very enthusiastic. And like, that's like a precious resource that you guard. Like, that's not like it's like a weird thing that is attached to this other thing. Like that's the source of what the innovation is.
You can't send someone off on training to get more playful,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can't mandate funness and curiosity and creativity. Like, you have to just kind of like foster it. And what it looks like is playfulness.
And then maybe to answer the back end of that question, from a like a product standpoint, I think something I would say the royal we have done well, but the credit sits with Hazeek here, is being famously, he says, and it's so aggressive when he says it. And he used to say it in like meetings with VCs early, and he'd be like, you have to, like, deadpan face, you have to be ready to shoot your baby in the face.
And it would be like the tone
the tone of the meeting would just be, like, everyone was like, yeah, I appreciate what you're saying.
He's but a also
like it was like a hard to recover from
there's playful. A lot of millennials that have just had babies too. So.
I know.
Triggered.
I stop saying that, but that's what it is, right? like that's really what it is. In order for you to have like the willingness to like be very brave with your ideas, you need to be in a playful state. Like otherwise you just start getting precious, and when you get precious, you waste time, and you can't see clearly, and you stop being a builder that can like move in interesting ways. It's very important that you can be playful with the problem domain.
And particularly, like, you've got VC, that you've got runway, you've got employees, you've got investors, you've got the public image. And it's like, and this is kind of where I was heading, with a few times of landing in areas that were pretty sensible and we were on the way towards proving something out. And it's like, maybe we should just grab this and just run with this, because it's like, it's not bad. Maybe we don't love it. Maybe there's a bunch of like risk if we pursue this. And Hazeek, again, to his credit, I say this now, not at the time. I was probably more pissed off at the time. I was like, mate, let's just fucking build the thing. Let's ship the thing and we can learn and then we can move if we have to. But he's been very firm and steadfast in his beliefs of like, no, like this is a process and we can't just do it because we're doing it. We need to get out now. And I think a lot of the startups that you may have seen that haven't made it, or even to this day that it may look like on paper like there's a path ahead of them, I think the tide will go out and there'll be a lot of tough periods ahead with people that, because they built a narrative, right? Like they raised their seed off it and then they raised their A off it and their B. And so then it as the tech has matured and maybe it's flattened or kind of wobbled, then you're already down the road and it's very hard to be like, hey, yeah, so...
Pivoting at Series D, not so easy.
We're not going to get there. The product promise that we've sold you and the market and to our customers won't materialize. So this process early, like you do need to be like violently pivot if there's too much risk down the road. And... yeah, even that pathway. One last thing that I think, Hazeek, you've been really good at is like you can run ahead a little bit and kind of map and as you learn around where those kind of the elements of risk exist. But like, there's an amount of forward thinking that needs to happen. But you obviously then you can't just sit on your hands and plan the business out until IPO. There's like a nice balance there that you need to find. As part of
yeah, like the kinds of risks that I'm like, cause, okay, mm-hmm. everything has risk, but like the kinds of risk that I think are like very dangerous with LLMs is where you need a open problem in science to be solved for that problem to go away. And there's a lot of those sitting inside the LLM space. Like I think this is kind of like the dirty secret of a lot of like AI startups. Like people get very edgy when you bring this up and you're like hanging out with like a bunch
as
of founders.
As a podcast host, I'm like, when do they get edgy and how? What?
there are a lot of open problems that sit inside the LLM space. A lot of them cut very deeply into whether or not that product will be able to meet their product promise. And like where I've been very firm is like we do not promise people things that we cannot deliver them. And we do not promise people things where someone else needs to win a Nobel Prize in order for us to deliver the thing. Like we promise people things that we know we can deliver them. Now, that might look like a risky path. That might look like, there's always going to be a risk. But what that risk can't look like is like Jan Le Cun wins a Nobel Prize. That risk has to be something that
we can manage. Tell me what you're talking around. What kind of AI product
the demon
needs a Nobel Prize to actually
There are two big ones.
this is a big clippable moment, Hazeek, so make sure it's big.
Let me fix my hair. All right. The first one is the super long horizon tasks. So we keep seeing like Sam Altman and the rest of them come out with these mega long horizon tasks. Well, they're training against those tasks. So like these are models that are specialized to do that particular thing. And like how generalizable that is actually quite narrow. So just because you can, build Slack for 30 hours doesn't mean you can go operate like an accounting business for 30 hours. It's not transferable in that way. And there are a bunch of products that are like, hey, we can replace these employees. But what you're talking about is a long horizon task. What you're talking about is a thing that runs for weeks and months. And like, forget weeks and months. Like what you're talking about is a thing that runs for hours at least. Like that is not something that we have solved generally. Like that's not a thing that we can just do. Like that's a thing that we, like you have to you have to train a model against that. What you need to be is a frontier lab to do that. So that's a big one. Like, and we've already kind of seen all those startups kind of like rise and fall, like all those like, oh, this is like an AI fully autonomous employee that will do all the things.
We were promised that 2 years ago. Horizon task is in like a horizontal.
Oh, no, no. A long horizon task is a thing where the LLM has to take lots and lots and lots of steps over like a very long period of time. So like, like run a vending machine business is a good one. Like that's a pretty simple task. Like we could all just go and do one. But like, I mean, no, like that, like that's not fair. I don't know anything about vending machines. I don't know how complicated it is, but like presumably we could get there. Like that takes a lot of steps. I have to reason about like what I just did and what just happened next and like, what do I need to do next? Doing that over a long period of time is very hard. And I think like all the startups that are promising that they can magically do that with prompting, no, you can't. The second one is memory. Memory is a very, 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 very dangerous animal. And the reason it's a dangerous animal is that it's very easy to convince yourself that you're close, and it's very easy to convince PCs that you're close, but like memory is an open problem. Like I know we've all used ChatGPT memory and we're like, ah, that has memory. Like that has
in
a very
in terms of the context window, right? Or bigger than that.
If it remembers about you, like, so when it remembers like, oh, like Georgie likes chicken and this is what she likes for dinner and she has kids and so on. Like that kind of memory inside ChatGPT and inside Claude is doing a very tightly scoped thing. Like it's not like it can remember stuff and do things. It tends to remember stuff that doesn't change very quickly. Where you get in trouble is when things change very quickly. So for example, like a memory of like, you know, is Georgie, like what gender is Georgie and like how many kids does she have? Well, like that's a lot easier to manage. Memory on like, you know, who are the stakeholders of this project? What is the most important thing in this business right now? Like that kind of memory that changes. It changes all the time. It changes day by day. There are all these different conflicting facts that you have to resolve that a human can resolve. Like I can sit down and be like, oh, I think one of these is true. But that's because I have a relationship with the truth. I'm like in the real world and I can like reason in a way that an LLM can't. So those are the two big dangerous ones. Like startups that are like sitting on top of this like memory thing. And it's the most tempting one, like so many people, and then everyone gets like a little bit weird when like, this comes up because they know it too. Like everyone kind of like knows it, but it's a bit like, eh. Like memory is a dangerous thing. Long horizon tasks are a very, very, very dangerous thing.
Andre Kapathy said that it reminds him of the movie Memento, Guy Pearce, Aussie actor. Have you guys seen Memento? He basically has tattoos all over his body because every morning he wakes up with amnesia and the tattoos remind him who's betrayed him, you know, things like that. And he's trying to solve this big thing. And I won't ruin the movie for you guys, but it has been out for about 30 years. So it's kind of on you. It feels like that when you're working with an LLM where it's like, how do you have amnesia again? I literally gave you an update on this like 2 days ago.
Yeah, like that's a hard problem. Like, so ChatGPT's done it a little bit, so it remembers a little bit of stuff about you. For it to go very deep for these, like, highly kind of volatile memories, that's very much an open problem. And if that's what your setup requires, if it's in a very dynamic space that changes all the time, like, the person that solves that, like, I would say that that problem is one of the precursor steps to having something like an AGI, right? Like, and if you need to solve that to solve your thing, then likely just solving that is more than the TAM of your entire business. It probably doesn't like.
The example that I like to give as it relates to this and why in my mind memory broadly can't be solved is like the truth that I have in this conversation is the truth as I represent it. The truth that Hazik and I have in a conversation in Slack is the truth with customers, with VCs. They're all versions of the truth. But only I know what the truth is. And then if I run some search query to like source the truth for me, or that then influences the outcome of an output, it could draw from like 5, 6, 7 versions of the truth and only I know. And if that happens a couple of times and it's the wrong version, I immediately distrust the system. I'm like, no, you don't know. You're stupid. I think it's impossible in that regard.
Memory and like horizon...
Long horizon tasks. Yeah. These like sort of multi-step things where an LLM has to keep continuously thinking through the same problem over some period of time. And memory for things that change quickly. like very high density memory products. Like I haven't seen a single one succeed. Like there were things like Zep, but again, like the lifetime of those things, it's meant to be short. It's
What's not meant Zep?
To be something. It's like this. It's pretty cool. I actually really like Zep. Like it's like this. It uses like some like a graph representation of memory, and it attempts to reconcile conflicting facts. But it rots very quickly. Like that's the general problem with these memory systems is like they get one error, it uses that error to make a new memory. Now there's two errors, and then now there's four, and then now there's 20, and then after a week, it's just rotten. The whole thing is just slime. Like creating that stability and making sure that it kind of can refresh itself is hard. Like it requires a relationship with truth.
You know, this is why I love talking to you both, genuinely, because I go on Twitter, right? And this is where I'm trying to get these kinds of nuggets of like, what won't survive? What is hype? What requires a Nobel Prize to even begin to think about solving it? Where do you guys get your info? Is Twitter a dumpster fire? Can you actually find insight? How do you guys get your latest thinking?
Like I use Twitter as an ingress into papers. Like Twitter on its own is not very good because people are insane and you're incentivized to make crazy claims that like upset people or like
for the algorithm.
Like, very inflammatory. And like when you're building, like particularly when you're like trying to work out what kind of product is feasible to build, like it's the details that really matter. Like so Twitter's a great source for like papers, but like you kind of want to keep drilling. Like you want to read the actual paper. Like they're kind of like they're more like a table of contents than a
Is attention all you need your favorite paper, Hazik? Because I've heard that that's the most cited AI paper of all time. Like so many citations.
I left research around the time that paper came out, and I remember reading it and being like, "Mate, like this thing, like okay." At the time, like no one really knew how to like that you could get to where you could get today by scaling these things. But also at the time, like it was like peak like CNN, RNN kind of like world. And we were just getting like smashed by like novel architectures all the time. So it was so easy to just sort of see one and be like, yeah, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, it's kind of like, I can see that might be more powerful than an RNN, like whatever. I see these every day. And then like now these, like so many years later when all the other ones have like fallen away and that's been king, I've been like, wow, that I remember that day. I remember when that thing came out and like it was on Carpathy's like blog thing, like
yes.
Some feed, and then like it was really cool. And then I was like, oh, okay, like whatever. And then now I'm like, I literally remember that day. Like I remember like where I was sitting when I read that paper.
I feel like that all the time, Hazik, where I'm like, was that just a major news thing that happened and I don't know amongst all the noise? Or
no,
I'll meet someone amazing in AI and I'm like, are they going to solve AGI? Did I just meet the person that may solve it? And who's to know? Who's to know? Will you solve AGI, Hazik?
No. You can ask me next.
All right, Mike. Hi. Sorry, I forgot you were there for a moment. Hi. No, but seriously, I do have a question for you because we talked about getting information from Twitter. What about sharing on socials? You guys do share? You are out there. Should startups do this? Is there an ROI to doing this?
Yeah. When it comes to sharing, particularly as a startup, when you like, because you have nothing really to talk about, right? Like you haven't got wins, you haven't got customers, you probably don't have much revenue. That's all you can share is your story. And people love an underdog, particularly in Australia. They love that story. They love connecting with personalities. In terms of ROI, again, it's too hard today because we haven't had any product to push people towards, but we get so many inbounds of people just like saying, that was funny. Everyone thought we got kicked out of the house. That was a pretty funny period when we did that house inspection video. Whenever you go into like meetings or like you and I think like that was when we first got connected via the great Millie, that a lot of the initial conversation was built on top of that. So we both kind of like to an extent felt like we knew each other. So there was common ground. So we could like race to building a friendship. Investor meetings, most people have kind of seen the things and they know the house and it's just like a leveler. I think it's like just like a really cheap, fun, easy thing to do. It doesn't have to be fancy. In fact, like the rawer, the better. The more representative of the story, the better. 100% do it. And it's fun. It's cool to share.
It is.
Yeah, it's great.
And Mike, you've got quite a distinct personality out there. You've almost got like a brand, right? Whether you've intentionally done it or not, you're in the garden, you got your Birkenstocks on. I think of Mike and I think of Enhanced Labs and I think of Aussie outdoor, honest hot takes, but moving quickly. Do you think, serious question, do you think having a brand in and of itself will be a moat?
Yeah, I'm sure. I think maybe to touch on one thing that you just said. So we spoke to a few, when we were trying to get this PR push and getting the AFR, we spoke to a few PR shops that said that we couldn't get covered because we were too early and the amount wasn't enough and didn't have meaningful traction and a bunch of things. So they're like, no, we could aim for these other publications. And of course, that like fired me up and I was like, fuck that. We can definitely get in there. We just need to work out how we do it. And a lot of things that I think people just kind of like just think we just stumble across, we are quite thoughtful about how we kind of curate like the details, like small little details. And like for that article, it was like, instead of just saying like, hey, we're this startup and we raise money and we're trying to do this thing, it was like, what is something that's very topical at the moment? What is something that the journalist would care deeply about? And so that's where the AI slop angle came from, because journalism, or at least there's been a lot of like threat of journalists being really impacted and layoffs within the media industry. And they are the truth. They represent the truth and they are very thoughtful and in creating this content. And slop is the antithesis to that. So it's like, that's like a really great thing that we think they would attach to and their audience would also buy into. And then my ridiculous dress with the Birks and the socks and the shorts was another like pattern breaker where, again, that almost broke the article, I think, because they weren't stoked initially, but as part of like a broader narrative of what the fuck? Why are these people doing this? Why are they dressed like that? Why are they, if you can kind of curate that a little bit, it becomes a talking point versus like, another company raised money for AI.
Yeah, but how also cool. The AFR is just Suits and RM Williams. Like, how refreshing to see your hideous white legs with some Birkenstocks.
I've got great calves. I have fucking
shorts.
Great calves. How
okay,
dare you?
Okay, the calves were on fire, but like, that's the clip. It really did get cut through. Like, my husband works in finance in the city, and I got literally within 20 minutes of the article going live on the AFR, him sending it to me saying, you got to get these guys on your show. And I was like, first of all, they're my friends. And now I will publicly say that.
but isn't that funny? It was just something
it's so funny.
Ridiculous. Like something,
so much cut through.
Yeah, for something ridiculous.
I think my
father-in-law was
a little bit
torn because I'd been like this useless son-in-law for how many years working like a broke boy working in startups to then finally being
broke
the AFR and he could show his friends and then I'm wearing fucking shorts. I think he was like, damn it, you couldn't have just worn pants.
Actually, that's the episode title, No Broke Boys. amazing. We are at the hot take section. I've got a question for each of you. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, Hazik, what type of AI startup will fail by this time, 2026? You've talked about a few things around this.
Yeah. Like things that require long horizon tasks where you're not a frontier lab and have no capability of training and models to do that frontier task. To do that long horizon task, 100% you're smoked. Things that require LLMs, things that allow LLMs to touch a thing multiple times without a human in the loop, whether that's memory, whether that's some sort of artifact. I think you're done. I don't think that you can keep that thing stable. I haven't seen anyone be able to keep the thing stable.
You talked previously about a concept called Pinks.
Pinks.
What's that?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, God. The concept of the Pinks. Okay.
This is about to be a 30-minute conversation. Okay.
The reason we call it Pinks is that we put a pink sticker on these things. And what is a pink? Because we got smoked by a couple of pinks early on, and then I was like, okay, no more. Like, these pinks, we have to watch them. The concept of this pink is... It's when you're trying to stretch an LLM to do something that it hasn't been directly trained to do, that it isn't routinely used for. And the reason why that's so dangerous is because a lot of the time it will seem like it can do it. It'll seem super, super close to being able to do it. Or you could even do a VC demo and show them the thing and it'll probably do it, right? Like the danger is that you don't know when the LLM will tear, when the performance drop-off becomes very steep. You don't know how far you can stretch it, right? Like, and because it's not your model, there's no guarantee that it'll keep stretching in that way forever. And things like that look like, oh, we're going to get an LLM to reason about this. What was the one that we had? Search. Well, hey, we wanted to be able to find like a reason about like kind of like the current state of your business. Because it can do search across code bases. That's so good. Well, it's been trained to do search across code bases. Search across code bases is a long horizon. You're taking quite a lot of steps. Even though it both looks like text and they look very similar, and we search through them in a similar way, an LLM isn't searching the way a human does. Pinks are these like very subtle differences in what the LLM is doing that suddenly cause its performance to decay. People that are stretching LLMs like that, you might get lucky where it kind of doesn't tear, but like for most people it will tear. So it's not a good idea. Do not stretch LLMs in a way that they weren't trained for. Like it's a very jagged performance curve and you'll get cut on that thing.
Amazing. Mike, your hot take. I want to know who you're dressing as for Halloween this year. I'm going as Elizabeth Holmes because I've already been accused of being Elizabeth Holmes in the past. I've never had a med tech startup, but like I'm giving Elizabeth Holmes you've energy and I love that for me. Yeah. What about you?
What era of Elizabeth Holmes? Like today or?
Peak blood drop. I can do all your lab tests with the drop of blood era. That's my girl.
Awesome. With the tech lens, my mates love to tease me because I'm from Brisbane. Everyone, all my mates are like property and consulting. And so they don't understand what I do, like a lot of people. So I get called like Wish Mike Cannon Brooks a lot. Because tech
like Timu version.
And because I wear hats in inappropriate occasions. So if I was, that would probably be the play.
Would you buy an island once you become a billionaire or?
Yeah, in Vanuatu. I've already got it. Lillipa.
What do you mean you've already got it?
I already picked it.
Oh, you picked it. Just to for the ones listening, doesn't
I shouldn't have said
own
that.
An
Everyone's
island.
Going to compete with it.
All right, guys. Honestly, I can kind of see the Blackbird method because I got a big ROI on this call. You guys were so generous with what you shared. So fun to chat to. Never a doubt in my mind. But if you want Enhanced Labs to be remembered for anything, Mike, what would it be? He's buffering again.
No, I just where my mind goes to, and I thought about this as well as part of that AFR like thing is like, what's awesome is when companies are on the up, and the AFR I feel and publications similar encourage founders to do all these like visionary like rap squats and like all these like really like you're the god pose, and then when they crash and burn they then use those same photos to mock them. So we don't want to be that
front cover of Forbes, and it's, you know,
the guy in shorts. Who would have thunk it? The guy wearing shorts in the AFR startup died.
Could have called it.
No, but for us I think like I think we've done to tie on like all we've spoken to, I think we've done a really good job of like being ourselves, and we do laugh about like if we do win and we have an outcome and then we get called in to speak on panels at startup events and stuff like that, and we just tell the truth and nothing but the truth of all of the stories and the chaos that ensued, and that'd be sick of like those like unhinged dudes, like I don't know how the hell they managed to do what they did, but it looks like they had a ball and they delivered shareholder value. That's how I'd love for us to be remembered.
That's beautiful. It did bring a tear to my eye. Thank you so much for joining in the Blink of AI. Where does everyone find you? Where do they find Enhanced Labs? Where do they follow you? Can you each answer that for me?
You go first, Izzy.
LinkedIn is the best place to find us. We live and breathe on LinkedIn. Enhancelabs.ai.
That's us. Thank you very much.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening, and thank you to this week's reviewers. I wanted to give a huge shout out and thank you, and I love you, to Ashma Gettigan, Tristan Cameron, and Kasia Parshib. Guys, you not only made my week, but this is brilliant because it actually helps me get better and better guests. We're already the Australian number one AI podcast, but if we want to get overseas people to know about us and get the best guests on the show, this is the exact way of doing so. I couldn't be more grateful. Slide into my DMs if you've reviewed the show recently or ages ago. I would love to give you a shout out. Have the best week, guys, and I will see you in 2 weeks.